from KQED.
And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. And for the rest of this hour, we're going to talk comfort food, Harlem style to be more precise. My guest is Chef Marcus Samuelson, born in Ethiopia, raised in Sweden before coming to the U.S., settling in New York City. He was named Best Chef in New York City by the James Beard Foundation in 2003. His restaurants today include Ginny's Supper Club and Red Rooster Harlem. That's the name of his new cookbook as well. It's got dishes ranging from andouille bread pudding to Obama short ribs and sour tomato soup with shrimp ceviche. I'm already hungry. Welcome to the program, Marcus Samuelson.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, yeah.
I got to ask you first, your heritage, super interesting. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I was like any Swede. I was born in Ethiopia. And then I was adopted. Me and my sister, we had tuberculosis. And we were adopted to Sweden. But very early on, you know, through my Swedish grandmother, she taught me cooking. And I wanted to see the world. And I've been very fortunate to be able to work in Japan, France, Switzerland. But coming to America, specifically coming to New York City, that I've been calling home for 20 years now. It's been an amazing ride, and I love sort of this. I have a diverse tale, and I love how many diverse tales we're telling through food in America today.
Yeah. How did your childhood, because I don't know how old you were when you got to Sweden,
yeah.
But you were young. You were a young boy.
Yeah, I was only two years old. And, you know, when I think about, I mean, we're all on a journey, all of us. For me and my sister, we come from basically a hut that is about the size of this table. I always call it the size of two restaurant tables. And be able to, you know, I'm very hopeful and happy about, you know, I was lucky enough to have great mentors. Just obviously my parents, but also mentors in my professional life that helped me, guide me, pushed me. And that's always the advice I give to young adults. It's like find mentors and they can, you know, really collectively you can really go as far as you like.
Yeah. So you're based in Harlem in New York City. And that's, of course, the cookbook is Red Rooster Harlem.
Yes.
From the restaurant. But to what extent do you merge with your cooking and your thinking about food, those early years, your roots, whether it's from Ethiopia or Sweden?
Well, I merge everything. It's, you know, being a good chef is also telling a story about who you are, both in the moment and the climate and the season you're in, but also who you are, right? And, you know, what the great thing with the book is I have an opportunity to really talk about Harlem, the community, but also the chance and then to, through the restaurant, really to tell a complex story about a person of color, right? There's so rarely do we have an opportunity to really tell layered, complex stories about our narrative.
Yeah.
And what the restaurant allows us and what the book has allowed me is really to invite people into this journey and say, hey, here's another point of view. It's not one monolithic way of a black tale. I'm an immigrant. I'm African-American, and I also have Swedish heritage, and I live in Harlem. Hey, come and taste this. Here's my journey, how I got here.
To what extent did you feel when you got – what year did you get to New York City? Was it
mid-90s, yes.
Mid-90s. So did you – Harlem is, of course, a very evolving neighborhood, a lot of gentrification there. To what extent did you feel like you had to kind of earn the respect of people living there, either through your food or other ways?
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, Harlem is a – yes. Obviously a village in a city within a city, but it's also an idea about black culture throughout the rest of the world. If you think about the African-American diaspora throughout the world, Harlem sort of sits on the intellect and the cultural reference point of that. And people have a lot of pride about their community. So I think it's good when there's a strong sort of, hey, skepticism, why are you coming here? What are you doing? So for me, it took 10 years. I moved in there 2002. I didn't open the restaurant until 2010 because I had to learn about what is it like to be on a different grid. Cooking in Midtown, cooking in Harlem, although it's only 6 miles apart, it has nothing to do with one another in many ways. It's also the keys into an incredible urban environment. And I'm a restaurant worker. Restaurant doesn't get always a lot of love for what they do. But for me, hiring locally and bringing people that may or may not would have come to Harlem otherwise, merging them with the employees from the community and the great characters from the community, that's the beauty of the restaurant. And a restaurant could be a way to unlock the mystique about these communities.
And the original Rooster restaurant was alive and well, what, in the 40s and 50s in New York City? So tell that story. Is it in the exact same location?
No.
No,
the
different location.
The original Red Rooster was a small little bar that had the politicians, but also the maids. It had, you know, Nat King Cole, and it has the famous people, but also the post office worker. And I was like, well, maybe, you know, I know that, you know, I've been lucky enough to my elevator ride from the dishwasher all the way up to, you know, the highest boardroom. Well, and a lot of creative people. So I wanted to have a restaurant that was really supportive of that. It was also an openly gay bar at the time, which that spoke to me. I was like, wow, that's amazing. That it showed a lot of depth in terms of both creative, but also in terms of the audience it talked to. I was like, that spoke well to me. So let me do something that was inspired from the migration and that era, but also something that is very much real in the present. And Inspire sort of becomes a beacon for the future in terms of hiring, but in terms of conversation about farmers market and the civil rights movements of today.
A lot going on.
Yes.
Talking with Marcus Samuelson, he is a chef and owner of a couple, two or three restaurants. Mm-hmm. In New York City. His new cookbook is called Red Rooster Harlem. And we're going to open up the phone lines. Maybe you've been to the restaurant. I have to say, I've been to New York City many times. I have never been to – no, I was in Harlem once, but it was not for a food trip or a gospel brunch sort of thing. I need to do that. When I was reading your cookbook, I sort of redoubled my promise to myself. I got to do that.
Well, come up. We would love to have you. It would be fun.
Yeah. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call. 866-733-6786 is the number. 866-733-6786. Or you can email your thoughts to forum@kqed.org. And I should mention also that Marcus Samuelson is going to be tonight at Macy's Union Square, 6 o'clock. So you can come out and see him as well. You actually, I believe, were the very first, the chef, guest chef for the very first state dinner that President Obama had in 2009. I think it was for the Prime Minister of India. Tell us about that. How did that relationship begin?
Oh, it was amazing. I was actually emailing with Mario Batali the other day because he did the last
dinner. He just did the one for Italy, right.
And like, Mario said to me, you kicked it off. I closed it. And, you know, it's obvious it was an amazing opportunity to do that. And it's something I will always remember. It was just when the First Lady started the initiative with her garden. So we picked a menu that had a lot of inspiration about, you know, vegetables and was vegetable forward. Prime Minister Singh was also vegetarian. And, you know, we wanted to do something that was very thoughtful for him. But it's a memory that I will never forget, and I will cherish it. And, you know, it's just been great to be able to have them come to the restaurant as well. The day when Mr. Obama came to Harlem, it was almost the way if the Knicks and the Mets won their titles at the same day, and they all celebrated in our restaurant. There was 5,000 people outside the restaurant just wanted in.
Yeah, yeah. And do you feel a particular kinship, I mean, to his story? Having white mother, African father, sort of that, you know, the Kansas-Kenya connection.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely, I mean, I have so much respect for the president and his journey, but also for First Lady. And changing the narrative, I mean, this just goes back a little bit to what I talked about. What the aspirations of what a person of color can do has completely changed because of a president forever. That says a lot about the people that elected him, but also says a lot about you can aspire. You know, if you're younger than 7 years old, 8 years old, you think about the United States president throughout the world as a black man. That's an incredible thought process. And what they've achieved collectively with us, the public, is an amazing achievement. We're in it right now, so it's maybe even hard to have distance to it. Yeah. But I think I grew up in a time through my parents were white, so they were taught us a lot about African-American culture.
Even when you were in Sweden?
Yes, and we called them the magical Negroes. And people like Nelson Mandela, James Baldwin, Nina Simone. And there was a way for us to really from my parents to say, hey, you can aspire, you can do something brilliant. My dad had many talks to me about, hey, the world might not be fair to you, but you still have to aspire. And I always held on to those conversations. You know, maybe my magical Negroes were Prince, Michael Jackson, and Eddie Murphy, but, you know...
There's a range.
Yeah, there's a range. A little bit different than Miles, but not that, you know, still different era. So I do think that as what the president and the first lady kicks out to the world in terms of aspiration, think about Africa. And when you think about Barack Obama, the inspiration, so the brain drain in Africa was always go to the West. But when they see a beacon like Barack Obama, they say, we can do it too. So it's an, such an important thing that has happened that we've been part of that I think it's even impossible to today to measure it.
Let's talk about food. Yes. and ingredients. Where do you? What are some essential, absolutely must-have, all-the-time ingredients in your kitchens?
I think... Berbere, the sweet, the Ethiopian spice blend. That it's think about it as a mild chili blend. You know, you have that. We always have that at home. I will always have some Swedish gravlax in the refrigerator. I grew up with it. I miss it when I don't eat it. It's just the way I grew up. Fish was something that was my first love. But also, you know, the opportunity of fresh vegetable, eating seasonal is something that we take for granted. You come to California, where you guys have obviously...
We're spoiled.
You're very spoiled, but you also created... You helped the world think about seasonality in a completely different way. So when we opened Red Rooster, one thing that I put as a big part of the agenda was I want farmers markets in Harlem. So now we have 7 farmers markets. Wow. in the community. Not only are the farmers market there, they're also there that you can pay with different systems. And the ingredients on the market is also relevant to that community. And I was always inspired with this movement here in California.
Talking with Marcus Samuelson, the chef, and his new book is called Red Rooster Cookbook, The Story of Food and Hustle in Harlem.
Don't forget the hustle.
Don't forget the hustle. What's the hustle about?
Starting a restaurant, period, is a hustle. If you ask any of my chef friends here, you know, getting investors, getting the location, not getting a landlord that buys in and understands, then that's one hustle. Then the other hustle is getting an audience to understand and getting the reviewers on your side. Then getting the staff to do it. Like, I can tell you so many hustles that, and then I feel like Harlem in itself is a hustle between musicians and, you know, with street vendors, and it's a beautiful hustle.
Yeah, and you merge a lot of that in the book.
Yes.
Not just the recipes, but stories and essays from people in the neighborhood, musicians and
Absolutely.
Others.
Absolutely. No, our restaurant would not be there without the community, telling the stories of people like Dapper Dan that started hip-hop clothing, and Thelma Golden that talks about art in Harlem, and just some amazing stories. We, El Barrio, the community that was really Puerto Rican-based, but today's Mexican-based. So just, there's so many storytellers, and I just felt, you know, if I just get out of the way and let them tell the stories, you know, you will learn something about this magical neighborhood.
And it helps give you street cred, too, I imagine.
Always good with street cred. Always.
Let's go to the phones. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. And Laura in Santa Rosa, you're on with Marcus Samuelson.
Oh, great. I just wanted to say, for those people that haven't read his memoir, Yes, Chef, that is a fabulous book. Many years ago, Marcus came to a winery I was working at and did a dinner for us, which was great. But the one thing about the book and that I saw in person is that Marcus is so caring about people that work for him in the kitchen, and he's so inclusive. And that's something that over the years in the business that I was in, you didn't see all the time with chefs. So hardly wait to read the new book.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you so much. That was so, how sweet was that? How kind was that?
And you can't do the hustle at a restaurant without really good staff, right?
No, and staffing is really everything. It's la familia. It's your family.
Yeah, yeah. You talked about local and fresh and farmers markets, but you know this is also Southern cuisine.
Yes.
The South has a very different climate,
absolutely,
than New York City does. How much of a challenge is that?
You know, the story of the migration that we know through incredible storytellers like Langston Hughes and Maya Angelou, part of that. We also know that the jazz that today maybe is part of hip hop. So we know that what that sounds like too. I want to really think about what would that taste like. And we know obviously that Southern food and what we think about in terms of soul food, but also what it's like today with modern contemporary techniques, right? So half of our menu, half of the book is really an ode to the Great Migration. The other half is my story as an immigrant and the food that Harlem has today. So which Harlem is part migration, 50% African-American, but it's also Latin, it's Jewish, it's Swedish, it's African, it's all of these different things. So I think that it's such an incredible base to start the food on, but then also you want to evolve from that. So protein-wise, it's about chicken, pork, and some catfish. That was probably three
proteins. And some shrimp.
And some shrimp. And then, you know, but there's a link there, right? Grits, how did it get here? We got it from West Africa, okra, groundnuts, all those things that we think about today as our food. Well, it really came here from a place.
Did you feel like you had to make some compromises because of where you are or anything else, making, you know, things you would have liked to do that you couldn't do for one reason or another?
I think, doing a book, yeah, there's always left turns and right turns that you have to do. I mean, editing out the book, editing out the amazing stories. I mean, some of the photography, we couldn't get all the staff in. But overall, I'm really proud about that, the fact that you get it, right? This is your app. Once you read the book, it's an appetizer to either inspire you to throw a Red Rooster party at home or come to the restaurant or engage in some way, or maybe inspires you in your community to throw a block party with sort of this sort of a celebration of life to it. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, working is part of you have to do compromises. But sometimes those compromises also becomes better, right? When I think about the music program that we wanted to have at Red Rooster, we now have a musical director. It's 1,000 times better than I thought it would be.
You're talking about live music?
Live music. You know, we have gospel brunch on Sunday. We have jazz on Sunday night. We have neo soul on Mondays. We have Latin on Tuesdays. So sometimes your compromises might actually be
a blessing.
A blessing, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Talking with Marcus Samuelson, he is the author of a new book, Chef Red Rooster Harlem, and of course a chef at the restaurant. And you were you went to Ethiopia with Anthony Bourdain, who actually had President Obama on one of his shows recently. Talk about that experience of going back there with him.
You know, one of the things that I really appreciated with Tony was that he, you know, as a person of African descent and also very often of African-American descent, what frustrates you so much is that the misproportion of good stories coming from a person of color's narrative versus what it is, right? There's a lot of issues in Ethiopia, but there's also a lot of good stuff. Yeah. So Tony was completely committed to telling this very layered, complex story about food and spirituality, or this really sense of hope of the young next generation.
His show is so much about more than food.
Yes, absolutely.
But history and politics.
History and politics. So I really appreciate Tony and CNN for giving us a chance to showing the skateboard kids, which is all about a celebration of youth and something new, right? Imagine that skateboard, the culture of skateboard has been in Ethiopia for 1 year. But it really represented so much more because it's internet access and all these other things. So to be able to tell that very layered, mystique story on a major network is something I will never forget. And Tony was really key on pushing this versus just telling a different story.
How many days of shooting?
We planned it for 6 months. It's really like making, they really committed.
You planned it 6 months ahead.
No, we planned it a year ahead, but it was really, we worked with the producer for 6 to 9 months before.
6 to 9 months.
Yes.
Wow.
And because, you know, it's really shot like a film. And, you know, he has an amazing team. And my wife was really the one that worked closely with his team. And also telling my story live on TV and going to the, you know, this hut that I was born. So, you know, I can't thank you enough to Tony and the team for really being committed to telling this very layered, complex story.
What was it like to see it again and to see those people and probably meet many of them for the first time too, right?
Yeah, you know, but also the response that we got afterwards, wherever I can be in an airport, I can be in the middle of nowhere, and people come up to me and say, hey, thank you for showing Ethiopia. I'm from Ethiopian descent, or we adopted a child, or we've been to Ethiopia, and I have no clue that this could happen. And, you know, sometimes, you know, just how media works. Like, there's a couple of places that get overexposed and a couple of places that you know, a lot of people still think about Ethiopia from sort of the 1984 hunger issues. We've evolved from that. We're not a perfect country by any means, and we're going through some really rough times right now. It's tribal, it's diverse, it's religious, one very complex place. But it also has a lot of good stuff, and that's what we were able to show in the show.
There are a lot of Ethiopian restaurants, and not so much in California, but certainly in the Washington, D.C.
Yes.
area and in New York City. What do you think, what's missing from the American interpretation, if anything? Are there some, I mean, some must be, like any cuisine, more authentic than others.
Yeah, I mean, you have about 1,000 Ethiopian restaurants in this country, which is pretty amazing, 200 in the D.C. area, which makes it by far the biggest African cuisine outside the continent, right? So I think that because you eat with the injera bread and you eat with your hands, it's very open, friendly to, for example, if you go through college years, right? You eat with your buddies. It's a very social way of dining.
Yeah.
So I do think that in a place like D.C. and that area, there will, next 10 years or so, will come a next generation of Ethiopian food that might be a mixed version, right? Because those kids now grew up here and, you know, they don't want to do what their parents did. Who wants to do that? It's just normal, right? So, a spice blend like Berbere, you know, my chef friends like Chris Costantino and Jonathan Waxman and people like that, they just think it's a great spice blend. And I love when they put it into, you know, their pig feet or their kale salad or whatever it might be. So that's an evolution of a great ingredient.
Yeah. And I should point out Dan Zoll, our producer, who you live in Oakland here or Berkeley? You live in the East Bay. Points out there are a lot of Ethiopian restaurants.
Love East Bay.
On Telegraph in particular, but, in Berkeley as well. Was I going to ask you something about Ethiopia? Oh, so here you are. You're here in the Bay Area for a few days. What are some of your favorite restaurants here?
Well, I love first of all coming to the Bay. It's so large and big, but it's fantastic. You know, I had a great meal at Coxcomb's last night with my friend Chris Costantino. It was a great, fantastic meal. He's such a great chef. And then I took a couple of friends of mine over to Inner Richmond, over to Spices, to have some good Sichuan food. I love sort of that strip there where you can eat food from Burma to Sichuan food. I love sort of this the Muslim Chinese food that you have here. There's the Caminos in, you know, we talked about Oakland.
Do you tend to go to restaurants that you'll find the kind of food you don't get in New York City?
Absolutely. And very often that is a regional version of an Asian cuisine that, you know, like Muslim Chinese food is not something you find a lot in New York City. And just getting that cumin lamb and understanding the complexity to that, I mean, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. What do you think is the biggest hole in the culinary world in New York City? What would you like to see added? Because you think of it as such a, you know, it is a mecca for so many different cuisines.
Well, I think in general, I think that California, if you take it as a whole, has in a way better ethnic food, and New York are more restaurant-centric, right? There's a difference, you know. I think the ethnic food scene here, even in L.A. and San Francisco, it's so pronounced and incredible. It's detailed, and there's a real buy-in from the audience and opinionated, you know, which we need. Where in New York, it's a little bit more the restaurant through just how cities, the energies of the cities, right?
Yeah.
This is one of the most detailed, layered restaurant community in the world. I know it's not easy to operate restaurants here, but yet each year there's new and incredible. I know the chefs, the community has worked really, really hard on keeping evolving, and I'm always grateful to come back for that.
All right, let's get another caller in here. Vincent in San Francisco. Welcome. You're on with Marcus Samuelson.
Hi, Chef. My name's Vincent. I'm a pastry chef at Mirage. We do Californian Moroccan food.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah, so, I mean, I read your book a few years ago, and I thought it was, life story was great, and, you know, the insights that you had on the industry were really relevant. Now, my question is, what are your insights or thoughts about the restaurant oversaturation scene over here in San Francisco? Because I, too, am from New York, right? And then, also, how do you differentiate the meaning in your food from fine dining, like at Aquavit, to what you're doing now at Rooster.
Yeah. Aquavit was where you were named best chef, right?
Yeah. Well, Vincent, I think that, first of all, the labels of these for me, I focus a lot on deliciousness and value proposition, right? So it's these sort of, is this fun dining? Is this casual dining? These are sort of terms that once you're in the restaurant, value is value. Whether you pay $150 and it was a great value, or whether you pay $15 and it's a great value. So, you know, when I ate at Spices, it was a great value for $25 for the three of us. And when I ate at Chris' restaurant last night, it was an incredible value, but a just different scene. So I think today's audience, today's customers, they are focusing more on the yummy, delicious, and the value versus maybe from when we started cooking, where there was more, is this this tablecloth restaurant or not? So I do think there's been a shift there. And I can't really speak to the oversaturation in San Francisco because not living in the city, I don't feel like I can add the right tone of voice to that. But what I can say is that focus on your food and your story. And today's for social media, you have an opportunity to kick it out and get an audience there that you can always come back and talk to. And California, Morocco, that sounds such a cool thing. So you know what? As you keep doing your delicious work on that, I think there will be a huge volume for that.
All right, Vincent, thanks so much for the call. We've got some online messages as well. Carla tweets, hi, Marcus. Welcome to San Francisco.
Thank you, Carla. I love Harlem
and Red Rooster. Be sure to visit the Museum of the African Diaspora, MOAD. It's global.
Yes.
It's global, too, downtown.
I love MOAD. I've been there many times, and I'm staying right down there. So
there you go.
Absolutely.
And then Sean writes, this lad has food on lockdown. Truly an underrated influence on culinary trends since I was a wee lad first learning to drag a knife.
It has to be from the UK or Ireland, right? Wee is an Irish word.
I don't know. It's just it's social media, so it could be anywhere.
Yeah.
Just a few seconds left, but I also just want to say this book is not just about food and culture. It's about cocktails, too.
It is, absolutely. It's the tempo. You come into Rooster, it's a big bar, big, voluptuous, large bar, and, you know, cocktail is so much fun part of a dining experience.
All right. And talking about experiences, there's going to be a couple opportunities to see you while you're here in the Bay Area. Marcus Samuelson will be at tonight at Macy's on Union Square, 6 o'clock. And then tomorrow he'll be at Elena Studios with People's Kitchen Collective at 9 p.m. for a book signing. And at Book Passage, a lunch at Enseladas on Saturday at 12:30. So you're making the rounds.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Thanks for coming by. Marcus Samuelson, again, his new book is Red Rooster Harlem, the cookbook, the story of food and hustle. Don't forget the hustle in Harlem. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irina Gucci, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer, Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Our interns are Brandon Yu and Maxine Schofer-Wolf. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our executive producer is Joanne Wallace. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks so much for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.